Hey, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, girl?
How are you doing? This summer is here.
Girl, full transparency.
You want to be honest, don't you?
I'm feeling pretty good right now. And before I tell you why I'm feeling pretty good, I'm Laverne Badger.
I'm Natalie Hayden.
And we are
We are
exposed
the podcast.
the podcast. So a transparent moment for me right now of how I'm feeling is things have been super busy the last few weeks. And me and my husband took a moment to go have brunch and well overdue time, right? And we went and had brunch and I had this recording and I had a little side drinky drink. And so those of you who know me know I don't really drink. And so it was a nice little free pineapple margarita, jalapeno margarita. And yeah, so I'm feeling pretty good. Needless to say, I'm feeling pretty good right now.
In so many words, guys, she's a little tipsy. So I don't know if we'll have to edit anything or
Right, so the
drop
words that are coming out of my mouth, please charge it. Do not charge it to Exposed Podcast. But I'm good. I'm good. I'm definitely feeling pretty good. Spent some good time with him. And this actually is, we're actually recording the day before Juneteenth. So excited
Oh, yes.
about this weekend and spending some time with our people. And
Absolutely.
celebrating after coming
I'm
out of
very
the
excited.
pandemic.
We got a fun-filled weekend, right? So between Juneteenth and then Father's Day, I mean, this month we really have been spotlighting and highlighting men in our community that we know well, and we've seen them. They're not just, ones to talk, but it's by their action, the charge that they take in the in their lives and the women and children that they are a part of. And so we're excited to talk about men and fatherhood, right?
Yes,
So we have a guest with us today and we want to bring him in like right away. But I'm really excited because I've watched this person over time just really evolve. And remember, last week's episode was about fatherhood evolve, but sometimes fatherhood really does I think it causes most of the men to have to evolve into something that they never, thought that they could be. And so,
This is a new girl dad, so we. I'm excited. I'm excited to hear his story.
yeah, so guys, without further ado, I want to bring in the new owner of Cupid Development, our close friend and supporter, Mr. Malik Cupid.
Hi. Hey, everybody.
What's
Oh
going
my
on?
goodness. Thank you so much. I definitely have to start by saying that. Thank you. I really follow you both and I know you both personally and what you're doing is just amazing. You're doing amazing work and I'm just glad I can, be a part of it.
Absolutely. We
we definitely appreciate that. Although we don't talk all the time, we got Facebook, and so I see what you're doing, and I love, absolutely love all the pictures of you and your daughter. Like, I don't know what it is about a man and his daughter. Like it is. I love seeing men with their children, but when you see them with their little girls because they are so out of their comfort zone with the little girls, it is just something to see. So I absolutely love the relationship you have with your daughter.
Yeah, my little one, she's awesome. She's my little life quake. She's my life quake, I should say. And I tell people that because she kind of shook up my life for sure. Some folks are like, I was a former athlete and everything. So they're like, oh, didn't you want a little boy and everything? Teach him the skills you had in basketball. It's like, something about little girls, they love their daddies, and she shows so much affection every day, and she brightens up my spirit every time I see her. So,
Wow.
yeah.
Wow.
That's awesome. And so the time that we're in is actually her name, Summer.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Summer name. And she was born in the summertime. Next month she has she'll be 5.
Oh my god.
The 19th of July, you know. So she's named after the season. And she really is sunshine. She really is sunshine.
She is.
And we see the little pink tool tutu or t-shirts in the background. ain't no bachelor pad going on there.
No. No, no. No, she's left her mark around here. I think I have a pink Barbie doll set over here and in my kitchen. I got a kitchen set and you know, all in my room. I got her Barbie dolls in my car. I mean, I can drive a Challenger. And for guys out there, you know, it's a sports car, right? It's a muscle car. And I swear, I look in the back seat, I got little Ken and Barbie dolls in the back and boots missing in this place and that place. I'm like, what is going on back there?
So
this
the
is
outside, my- you look cool.
On the outside, I look cool. Inside. But if you look... You look on the inside, you're like, well, what's going on here?
What's
you brought
in the daycare?
Yeah. Man, that is.
Summer said, I'm the only woman up in here.
Pretty much. She leaves her mark.
She does, and she's such a sweetheart. But before Summer, what were the examples you had growing up? You know, like most of our Black men, we were absent of having a father. And did you have that? And did you have several examples of what that looked like? And then how did you sort of mirror yourself in that way? And when it was your turn to be a father?
Yeah, it's interesting. That's really a great question. Because I'll tell you now, like, until becoming a dad, I feel like I didn't really have a lot of the language to kind of communicate, like, what my experience was like growing up. My parents, you know, both my parents are deceased, by the way, and God bless their souls. My mom passed away in 2004. My dad passed away in 2014. And so they met and married in New York City. That's where I'm from. And my mom, she was from the South, a rural town in North Carolina. And my dad was from the Caribbean, from St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And they met in New York and they met at night school. And so they were very young when they met. They met and married probably within a couple years, had my sister first. My sister's 4 or 5 years older than I am. And then they had me, and they stayed married in the same household. I should definitely qualify that in the same household married.
Yeah.
for about I would say 8 years up until I was around 5 years old, and then they separated. They went their separate ways, and then they maintained a little bit of a co-parenting setup, right? So my dad, you know, I have a lot of positive things that he taught me just about life, you know, and he was an awesome guy. I mean, he definitely wasn't perfect. That's right. For sure. And I saw that other side of his imperfections, you know, and a lot of it from the vantage point of my mom and kind of some of the things that they were going through in their co-parenting. You know, struggles at times, you know. And so, yeah, that kind of hit hard. It hit heavy a little bit as a kid, not really understanding kind of how that thing should work out or how it could look and, you know, and the ebbs and flows and of that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, but overall, the men who were close to me in my life, my uncles, my mom was a part of, she was one of 12 kids. Ooh. She had about 6 brothers. And all my uncles, they were surrogate dads. Again, not perfect guys, you know. So, I mean, you know, in the traditional sense of the word, they weren't perfect, you know. But they, you know, they taught me a lot about just kind of just having principles and having values. Right. You know what I mean? And you can have values and vices at the same time.
Yeah.
You know? Right. You know, and that's what I certainly learned from them.
So when you brought up how you recognized the co-parenting that your parents had to do, mm-hmm. did that help you with how you approach co-parenting with Summer's mom? Or is that a totally different dynamic of happening now?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll tell you, like, there definitely were certain things about their co-parenting setup that I did not want for myself. That's for sure. You know, like I said, there were ebbs and flows. There were some seriously tumultuous periods that I can recall my parents going through. I mean, I think there were years at a time that they didn't even speak to one another. You know, and how uncomfortable is that as a kid, you know, when your parents don't talk?
Yeah,
right.
Whether or not they're together or not, they just don't even talk. You know, they couldn't be in the same room. They didn't talk. You know, holidays come around, you get dropped off to your grandma's house, or she might come upstairs and drop us off, and my dad's there. Then, you know, it was just a lot of, you know, that sort of thing that I saw. And yeah, and certainly I didn't want that for myself. And I understand co-parenting setups happen quite often, you know, in our society. I don't think it's preferable, but I think it's almost like the new, it's normalized at this point. So I don't really think it's anything that anyone should, you know, it shouldn't be a stigma to it, but
right.
But it might be. It might still be a little stigma to that. But
co-parenting is definitely, I would view that as a positive and progression, because it's like it's either one or the other. Co-parenting meaning that both parents are trying to remain in their child or children's lives, although they're not together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's progression, you know, that's progression. So I definitely don't think that people are proud of that when you can co-parent successfully. I think the Smiths, you know, Will and Jada Smith, people, you know, make it where they put their stories out there to show how co-parenting is done well, how it can benefit the children. You know, Alicia Keys and her husband and his ex-wife, you know, there's some examples of people who are really trying to do that, because I don't know, honestly, is that the norm, that original parenting is not there anymore? You know, marriages break up, relationships
blended break up. Families, you're talking about,
right? So blended families and co-parenting situations have now seem to be the norm. So kudos for you and working through that. So
no, absolutely. And I, you know, and like I said, it, you know, has ebbs and flows, you know, so it's one of those things where, you know, when it's bad, is really bad. And when it's good, is great, you know. So it's one of those things, you got to find that balance. But you know, and I think as long as both folks kind of have the same vision about just remaining positive figures in their child's life, and sometimes it's not always easy to put aside like kind of the things that have happened in a relationship and what is going on. And that's understandable, you know, in certain circumstances. I get that, you know. But as long as, you know, you can somehow over time get to a place where that can work out. And it doesn't have to happen right away.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. In time. And so some time has really passed, even for you, if you feel comfortable sharing, like, how did, you know, as you have grown up and watched your parents sort of go through the ebbs and flows of co-parenting, now you are a dad. And what is it that you really have taken and really tried to not duplicate in your own parenting styles and abilities with Summer? Because, you know, there are times where co-parenting cannot be healthy and it can be actually quite toxic, and you have to somehow filter through and create that balance. How did you create that balance for the sake of Summer?
Right. Well, it's still in progress, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, still working on that. And I think one thing, I just want to be available, you know, and accessible, you know, to my kid, you know, and just making sure that, you know, anything she got going on takes priority, you know what I mean? sometimes, you know, even if I have to, you know, even if it requires me just to kind of put aside something for a little bit for that particular moment, you know, mm-hmm. about her. So, because I know how important that is. I played basketball, organized basketball, since I was probably 11 years old, and played a mini summer tournament. Used to get all these trophies, sometimes be about 7 feet tall and all that sort of stuff. Then I went away to high school and played b-ball for high school and then basketball in college. And what I used to look around and look in the stands, and I used to always say, man, I wish my parents were here. And it was one of those things where I would see my teammates and their parents would be all up in the stands, like cheering them on. Hey, good job. And I didn't know their parenting. I didn't know what was going on in their household. I just assumed that, you know, their parents were married or whatever. But it was that sort of thing that definitely I said, you know, I don't want that for my child. You know, my parents, like the communication sometimes got so bad where, you know, it was like, you know, you forget about the kid. You know, yeah. And what the kid has going on, you know, I would have loved that, you know, like I said, look up in the stands and say, hey, there's my mom, there's my dad cheering me on. I can honestly say, I don't think my mom attended. I think the first and only basketball game she attended was my senior year of college when I got like an award or something like that. But I've been playing basketball since I was 11, but it was like, you know, whatever life took her over, you know, whatever she needed to do to keep us going. And, you know, and then my dad, you know, whatever he needed to do to keep himself going and keep us going, it kind of like, you know, pulled a little bit of that unit apart. And, you know, and so it was things like that, that I was like, you know what, I don't want that. Like any activity my kid has going on,
that's huge. It's, I remember, because Richard's a military kid, so his dad was military, and you know, mom, they were married and primarily was with his mother, but he doesn't ever remember his dad coming to any games. And so when he has that, and he has a great relationship with his dad, and so it was still that piece that he felt like he just wasn't there. But in that era, his dad was just like a man provided. Mm-hmm. And financially, you provide it, and he did that. You know, he got an A+ in that of providing for his family, but being able to necessarily be that emotional support by saying, "I'm gonna come to a game, cheer him on, you, I'm cheering you because I got these lights on." You know what I'm saying? And I'm paying these bills. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I love to hear that. That's on the forefront, that dads are thinking that it's not just about financial support, because that can get missed in child support as well. Like, child support is not all of what a child needs. Financially, yes, they need the child support to help support them financially. But almost the court is saying, if you don't have the financial support, you don't get any rights to see, to nurture the emotional side of a parent-child relationship. And so I'm hoping with more dads like you of understanding how being hands-on and physically being there, that's a trend that's going to continue to grow. Because at the end of the day, it benefits Summer on the type of woman she's going to become.
I mean, I feel like it's even bigger than that. I think, you know, when we have dads that have evolved, like you, Calvin, and G, our past guest, you know, you really are considering the community, you're considering the village, you're considering, you know, the world and who your children will go on to touch and impact. Right. Because with you not in her life, it can be a whole nother way, right?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I see the bigger picture. And so I'm just really grateful even, you know, for that mindset to say, I want to be accessible and I want to be present. I want to be involved, and I'm going to have to go through some things, you know, even when you do say, for instance, you try everything the right way. shit still don't work out. You know?
Right. And you know, and you know, and I'm also an educator, right? So
yeah,
I'm a teacher. You know, I work for MPS. I've been in special education now for 10 years. So I work with students and parents. You know, and I've worked with students and parents from all from different income levels and all of that, right? So there's some serious real issues out there, and parenting, like everybody. I feel like it might need to be a parenting class, because parenting is really like you see it and you learn so much through experience, because everyone has had at least an adult in their life raising them, you know, however that structure was, whether it was your parent, your grandparent, a guardian or whatever, you had an adult raising you, you know, at some point. And so we have become conditioned to think parenting needs to look maybe that way or not that way, you know.
Right.
But I just feel like, you know, a lot of it is kind of like it's yours. It is you to embrace, is you to, you know, say, you know, this is what I want for my kid. This is how I want to be, you know, for my kid. I'm not trying to, I can't be like my dad. I can't be like my mom. They were who they were, you know, and I can't be like the person I see on TV who seems to be, you know, doing everything in the right way. That's not who I am, you know? And so, you know, I think, you know, as long as you take an authentic approach to parenting and you realize, you know, and stay open to trying different things and is keeping the kid at the forefront, you know, a lot of that stuff will shake out. I mean, I don't even want to get into that whole child support situation. Right. That's an animal all in itself.
That needs a whole conference platform.
Listen, we need a whole drink in a bar.
We understand where there's the need, but somewhere, somehow, it turned into business practices versus what's in the best interest of the children.
Yeah.
So.
And to touch on that, it's not just the parents. It's kind of the systemic. It's a system.
That's what I'm saying. The system.
You know, it really is a system. There's a lot of folks, you know, and I mean, breakups are hard, you know, and when you're talking about, you know, a family unit, how like equitably to figure that out and try to make it work as best as possible for the kid and without, you know, changing a whole lot of things. I mean, you know, you would think that, you know, everything just would, it's not really, it shouldn't be a formula for that, because every situation is different.
It's different. Yes. It has to be tailored, right? Yeah.
You would think it would be more tailored, but it's like a lot of the initial decisions on how that works out just seems to be so cookie cutter and it can cause a lot of stress, pain, and anxiety in a relationship of co-parenting. You know, right. And so
you know what? It's not, I feel like who tends to experience that is the child. Although us as the parents, we can somewhat take it, but what about this innocent child? And then that's what I thought about. I really wanted to, at the own expense of, you know, what I was feeling, I was willing to lay myself down so my daughter wouldn't have to feel the turbulence of all of that, you know what I'm saying? So many parents do consider that and understand how difficult that system can be. So let's just turn the tide a little bit.
Yep.
As far as how is it that you are mentoring and sharing, you know, like your experience of just like being, for one, an evolving man, an evolving father within the community? What do you have going on?
Oh, well, what do I have going on? So, okay, so this is my plug. I'm president of Cupid Development LLC. And so Cupid Development is a commercial real estate company focusing on affordable housing, LIHTC deals, and workforce housing. So that's something that I think is very, very important. Creating stability of having affordable housing is something that is very, very needed. Wisconsin is doing a great job under the leadership of Governor Evers and Otero, who is the CEO of WEDA right now. Like, they understand that Wisconsin needs a lot more affordable housing units. And, you know, and that's personal for me, number one, because in this setup of co-parenting, I know for a fact that some of the decisions that my mom made for my sister and me as far as education and being able to pay for a parochial education, and that's it's like a Catholic school, basically, for us, she was able to do that because we lived in an affordable housing unit. And so I couldn't imagine if she, you know, she worked for New York Bell. She was a telephone operator for a while, which later became 9X, which later became AT&T, which later became Verizon. But she, I remember seeing one of her tax statements when I was very young. And I don't know, like, you know, adjusting for inflation and all that sort of stuff. But at the time, I remember some numbers like $27,000 a year. She was, you know, raising two kids on $27,000 a year. And I couldn't imagine. And I mean, you know, and the whole child support thing is a separate issue. But, you know, I couldn't imagine, you know, her trying to find housing, market rate housing.
Hello, somebody
in New York City, you know, with two kids and the job that she had. So, like, you know, that is so, so, so important. And so Wisconsin, like I said, we're trying, you know, to try to put together a couple some more affordable housing units here. And I'm working on one project, the Edison School of Apartments on 37th Street. It's a former Thomas Edison school. And I'm partnered with Gorman and Company and partnered with Lutheran Social Services. And so we just got awarded a tax credit from WIDA, over $1 million tax credit. So we are definitely trying to do our part in that. So that's my plug. That was a long
congratulations. And you know what, Malik, can you say where you started? And you started while you were still in transition. So what organization did you go through to get started with your development?
Exactly. I guess I would be remiss if I don't talk about Acre.
Hey, come on, Acre.
Yes, that's the Acre plug. So Acre is a program affiliated with LIS, and they're also affiliated with a bunch of universities around here. So Marquette's affiliated with Acre, MSOE, UWM. And so what the goal of the program, it's like a 26-week program, extensive hands-on program of, and the mission, I believe, is to diversify the commercial real estate industry with people of color.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know what's going on, what happened. What happened was, so,
shout out to Anchor. Richard's an Anchor graduate as well.
Oh, I think I did know that. That's awesome. Okay.
We talked about it at the community table, remember?
Yeah, I remember that. Absolutely. Yeah.
So looking forward to soon get there. Nat, did you see what's her name? Just bought her first commercial property.
Tonda.
Tonda.
I saw that. Yeah.
I don't think I know Tonda.
Tonda.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we might have to connect you with her, but she just bought her first commercial property. I just saw that on Facebook and so proud.
Because she is a carpenter, slays wood, she builds tables.
You might be able to use her because she does amazing work.
She's a dope one. Malik, you did the Harambe. She also was over the Harambe, Tonda Thompson, for infant mortality rate. That's the whole thing of Harambe, the walk run.
Okay.
Yeah, she's over that.
Okay. Well, hey, that's another thing I want to do. I want to say shout out to Milwaukee. You know, I'm a transplant. You know, I am a New York transplant, but shout out to Milwaukee. I really believe, like, the black and brown folks here, you have a entrepreneurial spirit, and it shows every time. I don't think I've ever been in a space where I've seen so many folks who look like me really on a lot of positivity, doing things, like, you know, always thinking about, you know, how can we grow this, you know, and I think that's important. And shout out to Milwaukee for that. You know, I mean, I really am glad that I'm here.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here too, because most of you would be like, this is we out.
Well, I mean, you know, and it's like, compared to what though, right? So like, I mean, I'm right. You know, like, you gotta have a frame of reference. So I'm looking at it like, you know, I bounced around quite a bit. I've been you know, around a couple places, you know, and I'm not, you know, yes, I'm from New York, but I'm not one of those New Yorkers who's like, New York is the best place ever for everyone. I mean, it's a high density, big old city, and it's like, right, you know, it's a major city. It's a city, as they would say. Yeah. So, but I've lived in other places, lived in Tampa, lived in St. Petersburg, Houston, D.C., Jersey, you know, Virginia, you know, different parts of Virginia. So like, and in the Midwest, I went to University of Iowa. So I was in Iowa City for a while, you know. And so like, and I worked campaign. So I always was in different towns. So I appreciate, you know, the culture of different places and what it brings to the table. And I, like I said, I have to say, in Milwaukee, shout out to Milwaukee, the black and brown folks here are really, they have an entrepreneurial spirit, and I think that's amazing.
But that's Summer good. Came along and said, we gonna have you sitting here for a little bit, that all that moving around.
Yeah, Summer put an end to all that.
Summer said, all of that.
You gonna stay right here for a little bit. So,
so you might as well go ahead and build, and that's what you're doing. Yeah. And so you're literally building a life, and you're leaving a legacy, creating all of that. And so I really hope, you know, any young person, any young man that is sort of in this process or in this transition of, you know, having a young kid, maybe being young, or maybe even being middle-aged, older, it doesn't matter, but it all hits us differently. But to know that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and that you can literally build from scratch. And that's, I feel like that's what it is for you.
No, absolutely. And, you know, and I don't want to really say my age, but I, you know, I had my first kid at 41, right? So hey. I couldn't imagine like, you know, 18, 19, 20 having a kid, right, and the choices that I would need to make in order to make that situation work. You know, I mean, I know I can only look to, you know, my best friend back in New York, Leroy. Shout out to Leroy.
Hey, Leroy.
Leroy, love him to death. Talk to him all the time. But I mean, he became a dad at 16.
Woo.
You know, and you know, and he's an amazing guy, amazing father. And I saw firsthand like how challenging it was for him. You know, there was a lot of challenges in a lot of respects. I mean, it, you know, the mother of his kid was young. It was around his age at the same time. So, I mean, it's a whole different set of decisions you got to make based on your age.
Right? Yeah.
You know? And for these young men who are out there and you find yourself in that situation, the best thing I can say is like, you know, you gotta just try to stabilize yourself as best as possible, because when you're stable, your kids are going to be stable. And that's what you need to do. You know, think about the high risk decisions. You don't need to make those risky decisions, because you know, it's not going to be worth it. You know, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, like you don't have to get it all for tomorrow. You gotta lay the groundwork to you know, to be there for your kid over time. Absolutely.
That's awesome.
That's a good insight, because it's, I don't care how, if you're doing it, of course there's some little challenges. At 16, you're not fully developed yourself at 16. But some of the anxiety and the pressures and all of that, whether you're 16 or 40, mm-hmm, of trying to be a good parent are still going to be the same. You know,
absolutely.
You know, and there's no blueprint. You know what I'm saying?
Listen, there's no blueprint for motherhood. So
mothers don't get a blueprint. Mothers sort of get I've said this in the other interviews. We get a little bit of a blueprint, because we're taught how to be nurturers through the baby dolls. So them dolls, the Barbies and stuff that you're already...
Yeah, that's all around here somewhere.
That's already set up for little girls, already put them ahead of the game of you guys in regards to the parenting, you know,
that's true.
Situation. However, it's still very difficult for us to make sure that as moms, as well as you as dads, that we have the same struggles of making sure that we're doing the best. We're not causing long distance, long-term harm to our children. We're just like, can they get out of it? They're not going to get out unscathed. There's going to be some things that we didn't get right. There's going to be some things, mistakes that they make. But as we just pray and hope that it's not something that's going to be life-altering. We get enough and we pray that they have learned and absorbed enough that they don't make life-altering changes. And even if they make mistakes, we're going to be always there for them, right?
Right. Yeah.
Unconditional love. And the kids are watching. They are watching.
Yeah.
They are little sponges. They are watching everything we do, you know?
Yep.
I mean, little terminologies. I, Summer says little things I say all the time. And it's like a part of her little personality now. I mean... So one of my vices is I listen to Lil Boosie every once in a while.
Come on, Lil Boosie.
So it's just something he says in his chorus, and it's like, what does he say? Big money, I like it. You know, it's like that part. And I find her saying that every once in a while, like it just comes out of nowhere. And I'm just like, little girl, what are you talking about?
She's gonna say it in church one day. She's gonna say, Malik ain't big. Shit.
Hello? That's hilarious.
Man, what they listen to at their house.
So, you know, like speaking of doing, and this will be the last, you know, the last question. Speaking of doing, what do you do aside from, you know, because as a mom, I am a huge advocate for self-care, and self-care has nothing to do with the child. It's for the child that you take care of yourself. So what is it that you do for your own mental health to maintain and sustain, you know, the person that you are and the work that you do in the community, as well as showing up for Summer? What does that look like?
I can be real about, you know, mental health. I mean, I'll tell you straight up, you know, I was seeing a therapist for about 6 or 7 years straight when I was in New York. I had some really tough times. You know, like my mom had just passed. Like I was going through some hardships, and then one thing I just didn't understand was like, what was the stigma about? Like I was literally like, I needed help.
Right.
I needed help. I was like, you know what? This something just doesn't feel right. You know, within. You know, I need someone to bounce some of this stuff. I need to unload. It was just too much that I had, too much that was going on, and I needed help trying to sort it out. And so in that process, I mean, yeah, with the treatment plans and everything like that, I really learned about myself in a deeper way. And self-care is important, you know, and you know, some things I like to do. Well, I'm an active guy. So like working out, you know, like jogging every once in once every 3 months or something. Running a 5K every once in a while, you know, or playing basketball as consistently as I can. And, you know, those are some of the things that I like to do that kind of keeps me grounded. You know, it certainly keeps me grounded. And, you know, I'm also social. You know, I like to be around lots of people, so I try to get out. Like this whole pandemic really, really bothered me. You know, because you know so many functions and festivals we missed out on. You know, I was looking forward to Summerfest. I was looking forward to a lot of the, you know, Bastille days and all of that sort of stuff. You know, because I like to get out, and that's for me, that's self-care. Just being out and just experiencing the energy of just people just being around you, you know, and
right.
This positivity.
I think we out here now.
I think so.
I think so too.
Pandemic what? Who?
Right. Juneteenth is kicking it off. And
are you gonna be there, Malik? Are you gonna go to Juneteenth? You gonna take summer?
I am gonna go for a little bit. And I may bring summer. I'm supposed to catch up with some friends that I work with or whatever. But it's gonna be early. So I don't know if we're gonna stick around the whole time, but I think I'm gonna get like 11 o'clock or something.
That's smart.
Yeah, stay for a little bit.
Smart. You know, then the Bucks play later on that night. So it's gonna be a jam-packed Saturday.
Beautiful weather.
But yeah, that mental health aspect is just so important. And mental health is not a negative thing. It's a very personal and intentional, and it's all about you. And so in that regard, you get to be selfish. But with our children, we want to consider them as well when we're thinking about our own mental health. Right. You know, like what we're doing, like when you say you're doing, Summer will also mimic and do what you do as she grows up based off of the things she saw her dad do. Mm-hmm. And so, those things are really important. But we don't really want to hold you any longer, but we're so grateful and gracious to your presence and your existence and the man that you are in our lives. I know you personally. You are like my road dog, and I'm so happy.
Thank you.
This was dope. Yeah, like I said earlier, I was a little tipsy, but I was totally engaged in this. I absolutely love good conversation, and I love when I see Black men doing their things as dads, but then also doing great things as an entrepreneur. But then what you're building is not just for yourself and a legacy for yourself, but you're doing something to create a space for a need in our community, which is income housing. And so, like you said, if I can afford housing, then there's the other things that I can tackle for my children to benefit other areas. So you and your sister were able to go to a parochial school because that rent part was lowered to have the ability to spend the limited funds on something else. So kudos to you on that. I think that's amazing. And continued blessings. If there's anything that we can do, let us know.
Let us know. We're here for you.
Oh, thank you so much. I am so honored to have been a part of this, and I don't know what else to say. Y'all are amazing.
We'll take it.
Congratulations again on Cupid Developments. Thank you. So, Malik, we're gonna have you hang back.
Okay.
Backstage, and we will close out.
All right. Thank you, Malik, so much, ladies.
You're welcome. Appreciate
you. God bless. Absolutely.
Oh my goodness. Wasn't that amazing?
That was dope.
I think he would be amazing. Not that I needed to.
I love that reasoning for why he started that, because that's a huge connection. Because people don't understand low income housing is not just for people to be lazy to say, I don't want to pay full rent, you know, or, you know, you really can't afford it. But then if I can get that low housing, then that allows for me to afford some different things for my children so that they can have something better, not to save money so I can, you know what I'm saying, so I can party or buy, you know, cars and all of that stuff. You know, people are really
in need,
trying to survive out here, and if there's opportunities that can be created to help that, I love it.
So I see so many blessings, and I just see, you know, with someone creating something such as a need as housing, this is something that comes up in the work that we do countless all the time. Stability is essential when one is trying to, you know, take care of themselves and their children. And so it's just really important and essential that we definitely wrap our arms around and support and encourage men as well as other minority groups to kick up and create and build in a way that we're providing and supporting each other. So I'm super excited about this. And we will provide all of that information. If anyone is looking to get in contact with Malik, I'm sure he will be open to sharing his journey and experience, you know, about even with the ACRE program and where to start. And we'll provide all of that information in the show notes. So I guess we're going to kick this summer off because, guys, guess what? We're going on a break.
We are going on a break. And clearly I started
my co-host is going to get drunk in the afternoon on a Friday. So,
man, I'm telling you. But I need a little nappy nap.
Now she needs a nap. And this nap is what this break is Expose the Podcast self-care. So we believe so strongly in taking a break. And that's when you are a high efficient and effective, you know, leaders in that way, you really do got to take a break and take a step back. So
you guys can go and check out our past podcast.
Catch up.
Those will be in rotation. You can always find those. And we'll still be around. We just, our weekly Wednesday drops will not happen throughout the summer. But y'all will see us because just like everybody out there,
we going to be out there. It's going down. And y'all can possibly check us out tomorrow at Juneteenth here in Milwaukee. I'm Natalie Hayden.
I'm Laura Badger.
And we're signing off.
Signing off.
Peace out, guys. Bye-bye.